This is the Emerging Women Podcast, where we become inspired to live and lead from the truth of who we are. We're creating a new paradigm for power that includes the feminine perspective because the world needs it. Hello and welcome, Emerging Women Podcast listeners, and welcome to our Radiant Leader Series. What you are about to hear is a conversation with someone I would call a radiant leader. Now, what I mean by radiant leadership is when we source our power from within versus looking outside of us for accolades or affirmations that we're on the right path. We're also leading with connection. We know, we absolutely know that we cannot do everything alone and we cannot be fully expressed in isolation. And finally, radiant leadership is when we work and live in a way that is not depleting, but actually regenerative. And we are living and working in a way that is in resonance with our deepest desires and the truth of who we are. Now, these pillars of radiant leadership are what has allowed me to get out of reactive living and to actually successfully build Emerging Women, which is now a multi-million dollar business. I've watched this change from the inside out, and the work that we've been doing here has translated into our offering into corporate clients such as HP, Asana, believe it or not, Halliburton, Oracle. And we have been changing the lives of women and men with this material and this model of radiant leadership. So I've just opened the doors for the Radiant Leader Mastery Program for Leadership in Life, and we are taking applications now for our spring 2024 cohort. You can find the link in the show notes or anywhere on our website. Come and visit us at emergingwomen.com/the Radiant Leader to learn more about it. And we would love to have you in the program. Now let's go to this juicy conversation and dig in more into what we mean by leading with radiance. Hello and welcome, Neha Sangwen. How are you?
So good to be with you again.
It's so wonderful to have you back on the show and into the Emerging Women audience. For those of you who are just learning about Neha, she is a powerhouse. And she first brought her work to Emerging Women, I think we were in 2015. In San Francisco. And at that point, her book was Talk RX, 5 Steps to Honest Conversations That Create Connection, Health, and Happiness. And you rocked the stage. I still get emails. In fact, I just got somebody else who was just like, I saw Neha and she just changed my life. So I still get reverberations and ripple effects from your presence and that body of work. Neha is an internal medicine physician. She's a doctor, ladies, but not only that. And this is part of her story. She's also a mechanical engineer and an executive coach. And what I love about your story, Neha, and I hope you bring it in within the context of the new book, but let me introduce that in a minute, is that you do bridge science, engineering, the medical system, but also just your propensity for looking at human potential in absolutely everything you do. And you've got so much heart. And there are not a lot of people who like weave that web of all of those seemingly disparate parts of being a human being. So your focus, of course, is on decreasing stress, relationships, creating connection, elevating performance. Of course, you know personally what it means to have an elevated performance and the pitfalls of over-indexing on that. I hope we talk more about that. You are the CEO of Intuitive Intelligence. Her website is intuitiveintelligenceinc.com. That'll be in the show notes. Lots of links in the show notes. And she works with the Conscious Business Leadership Academy. You are the co-founder of that, CBLA, And that's a program that empowers CEOs to implement the principles of conscious capitalism. So she's also into conscious capitalism, people. The list goes on and on, while simultaneously addressing mental health and burnout across their organizations. Welcome, Neha. And
oh,
your new book,
you.
I'm going to hold it up, is Powered by Me, From Burned Out to Fully Charged at Work and Life. And it seems like you've been really in what's happening with organizations now, and I would say probably since before the pandemic. And so, yeah, just tell us where you're at. Give us your story. Let's lay some groundwork here.
Well, thank you. I cannot believe it's been almost 8 years. So since 2015, when we did Emerging Women in San Francisco, so nearly a decade. Yeah, somehow in that decade, I have gotten another book out of me. I will not have actual babies in this lifetime, but I say to myself, as an Indian woman, right, there's a few things. They want you to become an engineer and a doctor, which I did both. And as soon as my parents started pushing me, when are you going to get married? When are you going to have babies? I wrapped up my book in a baby blanket and I handed it to my parents and said, this is your grand book, baby. And they were not amused, like, at all. But in the Indian world, babies are next to your education. Those are like the things you're supposed to do. So what I'd say is I'm the middle daughter of immigrants who came here with an arranged marriage in 1965, my parents. And I became a people pleaser pretty young. I had some trauma, and my way of trying to fit in and belong was that I became hyper-focused on the external environment, and I knew what everybody wanted from me, and I was going to give it to them so that there would be happiness, belonging, connection, harmony. And so as I grew up, I realized, you know, athletics, academics were really good to get you love. And my dad wanted a son who was an engineer, couldn't do the son thing for him, but gave him the engineer. And my mom felt that she missed her calling to be a doctor. And so when I realized those two things weren't mutually exclusive, I became a mechanical engineer, worked for Motorola, and then went to medical school and became an internal medicine physician. So now I'm out working in the world, and about 3-4 years in, I remember being a hospital physician, 18 hospitalized patients. I walk in one day and I say to the nurse, you know, I've been working for about 5 hours, and I say, Nina, could you please get 40 mil equivalents of IV potassium for the gentleman in 636? And she looked at me and she said, Dr. Sangwan, are you okay? And that was really my first indication that I might not be. And I said, yeah, why? And she said, that's the fourth time you've asked me that same question in under 5 minutes, and I've answered you every time.
Wow. Woo! Chills. Yeah.
And I didn't really know what to do with that because I had no recollection of that. And so I headed to a psychiatrist colleague's office, and 1 hour later, he had written prescriptions for me. One was for medical stress leave, and the second one was for Prozac. And I remember driving home. First of all, I shouldn't have been driving home, but driving home and just looking at the Prozac on next to me on the passenger seat, mm-hmm. something I had prescribed to many people for, you know, I believe is fine for the right person, for the right ailment, for the right amount of time. But I remember just looking at it thinking, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm pretty sure it's not a Prozac deficiency. And so I put that pill box, those pills up in the top drawer in case I needed them. Mm-hmm. And I started going to my weekly sessions with the psychiatrist and learning, what is this thing called burnout? This was like 20 years ago. What is this thing? I don't even know what's going on with me. Why didn't anyone ever teach us this? So after 5 weeks, I started understanding a lot about how this had happened, how I, you know, in an understaffed healthcare environment was always like, I'll do it. Oh, really? We're short-staffed. I'll take the extra shift. Yeah. I'm wanting to get an A even at work and be the, you know, savior and the big team player.
Well, not to mention unfulfilled desires from my parents. I'll take it.
It's so true. And so what I realized was I was taking on saying yes to another shift when I should have been saying yes to a good night's sleep. And it was a really hard lesson to learn boundaries and learn that anytime we say yes to something, you and I have said yes to this podcast right now. The people who are listening are saying yes to listening to this podcast right now. That means we've said no to something else that we could be doing. Mm-hmm. And so when I used to think saying no was rude or not okay. And what I realize now is when I say no to something and it doesn't come from a fearful or frustrated place, but it comes from an inspired place, then it's really about me saying no, thank you to an offer, an opportunity that has arisen, and saying yes to myself or saying yes to whatever's higher that I value or prioritize in this moment. So I'm really saying yes to creating the world I want. So I had 5 sessions with that psychiatrist. And on the 5th session, it was the first time that my throat, which was like so constricted, had started to relax and I had started to sleep through the night. And I came running in because I was like really excited to tell him that maybe I could go back to work now. I was feeling better and I was starting to sleep. And he said to me, "Oh, Neha, it's so great. The Prozac is kicking in." And I was like, "Oh my God, this is the problem with having a doctor be your patient. I didn't tell you that I put it away. I wanted to see how our sessions worked before I put myself on medication, because I knew then I'd have to wean myself off." Mm-hmm. And I was a little afraid of all the side effects I had learned in medical school.
Yeah.
And so he looked at me and he said, "Neha, as a psychiatrist, I can't bill for a patient who's not on medication. So you have to make a decision. Are you going to start the medication or are you going to find another provider?" And I think it broke my heart again, right? That was like the second time that I thought, how can I be in a system? Something's working. And because there's these insurance requirements or whatever it is, I don't get to stay with who I wanted to stay with. But the good news is, you know, I found other mentors along the way that helped me. And this book is really the 20 years of what I wish the medical system and people who feel burned out could have. Because what they did was they gave me the short-term solution and pulled me back from falling off a cliff
mm-hmm.
of burnout. I could have hurt a patient. I could have done something catastrophic. But they saved me from that, but they didn't really help me figure out what are the underlying issues and how do I have the tools to change that. And so that's what I wrote.
Yes. And I love that you brought in the system. And again, the book is really focused on, you know, there's so many tools and perspectives for the individual yeah. who's facing this, who's either in burnout or on the precipice. But I do want to touch on the system because I don't necessarily want to give the message to the individual, and you do not do this in the book, but I just want to acknowledge that the systems are effed up, and they're effed up for women, and God help you if you're going through menopause, because yeah. you're going to get all kinds of diagnoses that are, you know, you're depressed, you have anxiety, you know, yep. all these things, or you're not going through menopause yet and you're diagnosed with that and you might be having an autoimmune. So there's a lot of stories out there like yours, and yep. look, Prozac has helped so many people. And so yes. I just want to say, if that's a solution for anybody on this call, yes, yes, and yes.
Yep.
But the systems with the catch-all diagnosis, especially to women, there's some issues, and this book will help you at least weed out some of the stuff that you can do. So you're not putting your, you know, you're not burned out at the foot of a system that is not really prepared to take care of you. And so that's what I love here.
100%. So let's zoom out then. Let's zoom out. We live in a world that thinks faster is better, that thinks we should do more with less every year.
Totally.
That thinks that success requires struggle, and that people's definition of success is how much their self-worth equals their net worth. And so if that's the society we're swimming in, We collectively, as one humanity, have used our minds to speed up the pace of the world. And as fundamental as our biological needs are, so too is our need to belong. And as women, specifically in society, not only do we have oxytocin, which is the hormone that has us want to be the ones to connect and hold community, but we, like my mom says to me, culturally, she never knew she had a choice to ever leave in a relationship she was unhappy in. Society blamed women at that time and that culture and that generation that they were the ones who were supposed to keep the family together. And if it went wrong for any reason, it was their fault. And so we got to take in, the way I like to think about it is me, we, world. Okay. So that's like, you know, the society that we're living in. Really important to understand that. Then there is, so the reason I wrote Powered by Me is I wanted to give agency and empower every individual to figure out for themselves and get the information that maybe they wouldn't get from a professional. Figure it out. So take this global overwhelm that we're experiencing and say, hey, listen, let's pay attention to the world we're living in and what it's asking of us. And have you just blindly started to believe that faster is better and that that's what society thinks success is success? Or have you actually taken a moment to step back, take a beat and see, is that my definition of success? So I'm asking us to take our agency, you know, take a moment to feel empowered, understand ourselves, so that then we go into the we. So that's me. Now we go into we. When we're in an environment of bullying, patriarchy, misogynistic cultures, right?
Yes.
The ways in which people behave, pay women less, do all sorts of things that are just not fair. Those experiences that go unaddressed, conflict that's not addressed, or we're told to be good, be polite, just carry on.
Accommodating,
you know, adjust. That's the we piece of the environment that we're in. And then there's the system, there's the world piece, which I spoke to you about, not only in healthcare, but there's the bigger patriarchy, et cetera, all of this. And so what I want to make sure someone knows, if you're exhausted, if you're tired, if you've been adjusting for a long, long time, this is not your fault. What actually has happened is people who burn out are trying to do a lot. They're trying to achieve and accomplish, and they're actually some of the hardest working people there are. It's just that when you burn out, it's a wake-up call that the strategies you've been using, you've outgrown them. You've outgrown them. So for me, when I had to do 36-hour shifts in the hospital and stay up all night, not unlike a mother of an actual baby, right? You have to come up with coffee. You know, I use 2 ice cold 16-ounce Mountain Dews plus a king-size Snickers bar, and you could get me up taking care of patients for 36 hours. Now, did I contribute to my own burnout? Well, my biology probably crashed after the sugar and caffeine and all that I was putting in it. But to me at the time, the alternative was much worse. Somebody dying on my watch.
Yeah.
And so what our strategies and coping mechanisms, whether they're taking, you know, sleep, I'll sleep it off, whether it's I'll take a glass of wine to take the edge off. Maybe it's, you know, Netflix binging. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, we want to actually thank them, thank the strategies that we've been using, because they've gotten us through a hard time. They've gotten us through stress. But the problem is, you know, they're a little bit like a fling that becomes a bad marriage, right? It's a summer fling, and suddenly you're in a bad marriage because it's time to really spend a little less time together.
Yes.
And grow into who you're really meant to be. And some of those strategies that served you in the moment aren't serving you anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah. What are some of your strategies when you've got to get over that deadline? You've got to get that thing done and your body's saying no. How do you get there?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I love what you brought up, the alternative. So for you, the alternative is life or death, right? Like if you're not, but for some of us, the alternative is not life or death. So it's
no,
it's
but not, it is. It's failure. It's shame.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. It is the equivalent.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of life or death. Right. Yeah. So those survival like instincts, like, oh, I can't. So fail. For me, like facing those alternatives and saying, you know, gosh, like embracing the failure, for instance, or embracing the risk of failure has been huge for me. Or I would say my thing is not just failure, but control. Right? Like letting some trusting enough in others so that I'm not like in everything and doing everything, which takes a lot of effort and takes a lot of energy and just every cell of my being, you know, from when my teenager is driving a car to when my husband's serving dinner because I've asked him to do it. You know, can I take my attention off to make sure that the size of the fish that he's serving the children is perfect, right? And I feel like those have been coping mechanisms for avoiding failure, avoiding the sky falling down or some like huge disaster. And what burned me out was the over-reliance on those survival techniques. It wasn't the fact that I was going big or that I started a company, that's not what burned me out. Yeah. What burned me out is just, I didn't have the book, Neha. I didn't have this book. I didn't have all of the coping mechanisms, but also the mindset that's in this book of, like you said, having agency, making a choice, right? And saying it's worth risking the failure.
Yeah.
Because if I can learn these things, then this will be a bigger ground to stand on than the top of the pin needle that I'm standing on now, which is about to topple over.
Yeah. Well, I think this idea of failure might be a good one to explore too, because what is failure? I mean, it's just us getting out of our comfort zone. And some people think when they quote fail, that, you know, they get washed over with shame and they feel worthless and I'm a failure and everybody, you know, imposter syndrome and everybody's going to know that I never was really what I said I was and all of this. Or some people just try to skip over failure as quickly as possible and act like it never happened. Companies do this. They're like, let's just sunset this program. And I'm like, oh, so we're not going to talk about what worked, what didn't work. And kind of use this information to do better next time. But they keep running the same issues because they won't look at what happened. And the way I've changed being a traditional doctor to writing books, speaking, paving a new path in healthcare and for women and in the world is because failure is, to me, a sign that I have stretched outside my comfort zone. I'm in the unknown. I'm paving a new path. And like, woohoo, totally. On the failure. Like, fail and fail fast, learn from it, grow. I always think to myself, good for you, Neha, because you took a risk, you trusted yourself, you took a risk, you went somewhere that you didn't know or expect. I'm proud of you. That took courage. Mm-hmm. And what did you learn here? So whatever pain I get, whether it's financially or emotionally or any kind of pain that I get, I always say to myself, are you ready to graduate from this life lesson? Or do you need more pain to get the lesson?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Are we ready to graduate?
Do I need this lesson again? Do I need to take this class again?
But when you ask that, it really like it forces you to squeeze every drop of the lesson that's in front of you because we don't want the lesson again. Right.
it'll be louder. It'll be louder next time. I promise.
Oh yeah. It'll be louder. You know, one of the things, well, first of all, like if someone doesn't talk about their failures, I have a hard time trusting that person, right? You know, just in terms of like when we hire somebody, we ask about their fail, you know, what was something, and not just challenging. When did you fall flat on your face?
Yeah.
Right. And leaders also, I know you work in corporate, and part of the burnout, what we're seeing, because we do so much with corporate too, is people trying not to fail.
Yeah.
And covering up failure so that nobody, right? So that it's spun in a million different ways so that no one perceives it as failure. That, talk about a source of burnout, right?
Yeah, well, they can do it, but they're just not going to innovate. And the name of the game in our world post-pandemic is ability to shift, change, pivot, be agile, and innovate.
Yes.
And so to me, that's a really old way of like the perfect culture. Everything needs to look perfect. And the pandemic broke down a lot of those invisible barriers. Now we're home does work, right? And so I think that feels like an older, like it's kind of the old guard that I think will fall. But I think the way that it's going to fall is by us learning to trust ourselves and viewing failure differently.
Yes.
That in fact, failure is us getting out of our comfort zone. And wouldn't that, what we got to do is align metrics, company metrics, to match what we hope people show up as. Because if you're measured by your revenue numbers only, but you were innovative and you tried something new and it didn't work and you get penalized for that, you're going to go back to aligning with what is going to be celebrated. And so I think what I've found is a big disconnect is, are you saying you value as a company innovation, creativity, thinking outside the box and entrepreneurship, but your measurements are solely on profit numbers and exceeding
goals. Right.
That's a problem. And I think we would do that even in our families. If we tell our children that they can take risks or we're proud of them for speaking up or whatever it is, but then they get in trouble when things are messy or we feel embarrassed.
Yeah.
There's that same disconnect where we're like, get back in line, do what you write. So I think we have to really in ourselves think about where we're in alignment and where we're not, because the problems come where we're measuring something different than what we're saying we want people to do.
Hello, emerging women listeners. Hey, if you have big dreams and you're looking to be fully expressed in a way that's both creative and influential without the burnout, if you want to live and work with more intention, grace, and connection and pave the way for others to do the same, I want to make sure that you know of our Radiant Leader Mastery Program for Leadership and Life. It's coming up in March 2024. Don't miss it. Radiant Leader is a 9-month immersive experience built to empower women in their roles as, you name it, executives, CEOs, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, creatives, and all of you that might be in between successes, and you might be at totally ground zero. We want to help you develop your leadership, extend your reach and influence, and watch your life expand in ways you never thought possible. Head over to emergingwomen.com, The Radiant Leader, for more details. We'll also have this link in the show notes of this podcast. We're taking applications now for our Spring 2024 cohort. Don't go it alone, dear emerging women. Get clear now, grow, thrive with community, and step forward and help reimagine and actualize a different way to live and work. Over 1,000 women and 2,000 men and women have already experienced and are raving about this experience, and our measured results speak for themselves. Check it out on the website. Everything you need to know is there. I will say that 97% of our participants report an increased level of confidence in their leadership and their ability to move the needle on what they want to create in this world. Consider this a call from the universe. The world needs more of what you are bringing. Yes, we do. But let's work together to bring it in a way that feels nourishing, sustainable, and good. That's emergingwomen.com/theradiantleader. See you there, sisters. Exactly. Now, just to kind of keep that conversation going, since we're on the corporate landscape here, what happens when women are saying, well, you know, I'm close to burnout, or I'm burning out, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But part of my failure is burning out, right? Like, I feel like a failure because I've burned out.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of hiding of the burnout, which right. makes the physical impact of that and the mental impact of that and the emotional and the energetic and the soul spirit impact of that so much deeper, to the point where it could manifest as a, you know, autoimmune disease. I mean, I'm sorry, yep. cancer, yep. like, let's just say, like, so many diseases that are coming up. It's not just the water, people. Right. Yeah. This burnout is bringing in, and they're, you know, starting to do more research around that, but stress and all of that. How can we create an acceptance and more of less shame around the actual burnout so that we can catch it sooner and people can advocate for themselves sooner?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's, once again, it's going to be me, we, world. Okay. Yeah. So there's the part of ourselves that judges ourself, that compares ourselves to others. Well, if Chantel can do it, like, she's running a family, she's running a business, mm-hmm. you know, I should be able to do it. And so there's these mental traps that we fall into, or what's we think society, whether it's in magazines, advertising, image, what we should look like, be like, all of these things, it looks so easy for her, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think we take, even with social media, I think it has really contributed to this, right? The 50% of the highlight of our life gets shown, and people aren't showing the other piece. Some people are, mm-hmm. but I think it comes down to the blueprint of our life. So when I'm really young, and I got sent away to be with my grandparents when I was 3 months to 2 years old, I was living, because in the Indian culture, you pass children around to an extended family. No one really thinks anything of it. But when I came back at 2 years old, my 3.5-year-old sister was like, who's this person? You're not a baby that I can control. You're like a 2-year-old who thinks you're an only child. It was unanticipated. So as I became a real people pleaser to try and not get bullied and adjust in my environment, all of my older sister, because she was very threatened mm-hmm. by me, and now having to split love between her parents with another child, right, who she hadn't grown attached to. So she starts bullying me and saying things like, you know, your skin's too dark, you're adopted. Do you really think you're from mom and dad? Because you came from somewhere else. You didn't. And rightfully so. She's a little 3-4-year-old. She's like, where did you come from? So she starts bullying me and telling me that I'm ugly and that I'm too dark and I'm adopted and why do I have curly hair and all these things. So as I grow up, I internalize the blueprint of yeah. my life. And now I go out into the world. And if I don't feel beautiful, if I see someone who looks prettier than me, these are the seeds and the root of whatever it is that's going to impact us out in the world. So what I'd say is, burnout is a wake-up call. Burnout is not a personal failure. Burnout is a wake-up call that your life, you've outgrown the coping mechanisms in your life that have gotten you here. And you're someone who wants to do it all. You want to achieve and aspire. But healing burnout is a team sport, not an individual game. If you are going to isolate yourself and try to do this all alone, it's going to be a much harder climb. And here's the thing, when I tell my burnout story, people don't come to me and feel sorry for me. They come and they whisper, oh my God, thank you so much for saying that out loud, because I think I'm not sick. I think I'm burned out. Mm-hmm. And so What if we lived in a world of self-trust, of truth, of transparency and transformation, where we could learn from our own experiences and pain, and we could share and learn with each other? Because that's a lot of what I feel your circles, like everything you've created to me is about, what if this journey, the triumphs and the tragedies, could be shared? And what if we had the power and support of community?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't we all be synergistically more powerful?
Hella yes.
You know, so
yes. Amen.
It's about understanding our own blueprint of our traumas that
yes.
lead us to judging ourselves and each other.
Yeah.
And being curious about that and having self-compassion. Kristen Neff's work around self-compassion, that can we have compassion for ourselves, that we've worked pretty damn hard. We have really tried.
Yeah.
We are putting effort forth to do good things in the world and raise our families and accomplish in the world. And can we cut ourselves a break? Like, I would cut you a break. If you came to me and said all these things, I'd be like, I totally get how you want your kids fed with the right fish, cooked the right way, and nourished the best. And like, give yourself, like, cut yourself some slack. You know, so I would have compassion for you, but why wouldn't I give that same compassion to me?
You know, I love that you're bringing up Kristen Neff, because the one hook that I use, especially for those type A women, not you and I, Neha, of course, but all you women on the call who might classify as a reaching for the stars type A baller. You know, it's interesting, because the bigger motivator with her research, she has proven that, yeah, okay, if you want to motivate yourself, guess what? That inner critic that kicks you up and down the street doesn't provide the same results as a hand on the heart saying, baby, you got this.
Yeah.
That self-compassion, actually, she's proven that you lose more weight, right? You get your goals faster. Right? You get to what you're looking for in your life more completely when you motivate from that place of self-compassion. And we are so taught, especially in Western, I would say not even in Western. I mean, you know, in India, you're taught that that inner critic is what gets you up in the morning. That inner critic is going to get you that A on the test. And she has debunked all of that with her research. So for those of you who are like, if I don't kick my ass up and down the street, I'm not going to be anything. That is just not true. So what you're saying is so profound.
So I have two thoughts on that. As I write books, right? Writing books is not the easiest to me. It's actually much harder. I like speaking. I like radio, TV, internet, podcast. Like, I like this world much more.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to scale in a way that the world can get it, I need to write books in order to get really clear. So when I do that, I can't have dairy or gluten anymore. So I drink coconut milk chai. That's like the thing that it's the warmth, the cardamom, the ginger, like I love it.
Oof, yes.
Well, it usually, I joked about having like a book baby, but I put on about 10, 15 pounds each time I write a book. It's happened twice now. And so my jeans, now it's time to go out and tell the world about your book. And I hear the inner critic in me saying things to me like, oh my God, you can't go out now and be public. And like, you don't even fit in your jeans. Like you look fat, you're going to look heavier on TV. You're going to look more, right? So whenever I hear that, this is what I did this time that turned it around. And I thought of this because you said, wait.
Mm-hmm.
What I started doing this time was I said to myself, hey, Neha, I'm really proud of you. Like, you got the book done. Thank you, body, for expanding to absorb the stress that I couldn't. As soon as I'm ready, I will take over. As soon as I am able. And all of a sudden, what it did for me was it really had me revere this body that literally has the capacity to expand, to hold the stress that I cannot in the moment, and the capacity to change when I'm ready. That's kind of a miracle. So why do I beat it up and eat all this sugar and drink my chai and beat it up as I try to power through things? And then on top of it, it gets beaten up by my inner critic. Like, that's not fair. In what world is that fair? You know, so that was the first thing that I thought about. And this idea of more results, I think what I should do is back up for a second. What is burnout? Burnout is three things. It's a triad. This is the way it's described. It's physical, mental, emotional exhaustion. It's been going on for a while. You've adjusted with all those coping mechanisms many, many times. Your own physiology has adjusted to less sleep and more stress and all of these things that's been going on. That's the first part. And then the second part is when cynicism enters. And the way that that sounds is after you're putting in all this energy and effort and all this stuff, you start to say things to yourself like, it doesn't matter how hard I work. All this energy and effort that I'm putting forth, it really isn't going to make a difference. And that's the undertow. Like when you're walking on the beach and you feel the undertow, no one sees it. It's like, but boy, you can feel it. And as soon as that cynicism comes in, you're not recovering. You're not going to recover when you are the one creating the undertow. And the third piece is you move into ineffectiveness. You're no longer as effective anymore. Or you could be me, a bullet train, like running straight into a brick wall that day where I literally was ineffective, right? I couldn't answer questions. And so it's exhaustion, cynicism, and ineffectiveness. And in the cynicism, what's interesting is people start to socially distance themselves from other people, even if they're isolated, even if they're lonely, even if they desperately want connection, because they don't have the energy to be in connection. And so what I want you to know is it's not your fault. This is like a phenomenon of your own biology trying to protect you.
Yes.
And so we go down, but it combines the social piece we were talking about, not asking for help, wanting to do it on our own because we don't have that energy. It combines the self-criticism, the inner critic, and how they all play together in this dance that ends up having us need to stop our life, stop our world if we don't catch it sooner.
Yes. Catching it sooner is what we need to do. And to make it the norm that it's okay to interrupt not only our own patterning and our own thinking that's keeping us there, like you said, the negativity, the cynicism, but also speak up for a different culture. If we see somebody else on our team, there's a lot of that going on. I just got off a corporate call where two people on the call, their managers were on burnout leave. Have you heard that term? They're burnout leave. Yeah. Okay, there's a term for it. Well, now's the time to do something about it. And if we can catch it earlier before it happens to us, then we can also advocate for others who might be on the edge. So
on my website, in the Learn section, but actually on the homepage, I have compiled Fortune, Forbes, Inc., you name it, like the articles that are all from this year on all of this, like a boss's number one job is addressing burnout, right? Mm-hmm. And so part of it is if you want to influence and communicate in your workplace, pay attention to what they pay attention to and how they receive information. Because corporate, I go in very mental, science-based. I tell them why tears are actually healing. If I'm going to talk about emotions, I'm going to tell you how there's stress hormone in one of the three types of tears and how it's the body's way of expelling it. And then I'll get into why we need to manage the level of emotional roller coaster that a company is experiencing. Right? When you want to influence a culture, you want to influence your leader, you want to do it by paying attention to how they receive information. And so that's why on my website I put, oh, you guys want articles? I'll give you articles. I'll give them from your mainstream corporate people. And so just pay attention if you want to influence it, because a lot of times if in a workplace or even in a family, people are less receptive to us just saying the problem and more receptive when they think that there's like some place that they might be able to learn about it, do something about it. Do we have any ideas mm-hmm. around this? And so that's why the Powered by Me is about you getting really clear mm-hmm. about who you are and what you need.
Yes.
So when you communicate and you are now an agent of change or influence, you know what to ask for. You know how to be really clear about saying what you think could change this. Mm-hmm. And you have some of your own experience to be able to speak from.
What are some of the, and you do have that, you have a section on boundaries here.
Yeah.
And so in general, when you think of women entrepreneurs, people just, you know, playing big and reaching, you know, for their dream life, right? What are some of the boundaries or the things to ask for, whether they're entrepreneurs or executives, that you see common enough that might be some low-hanging fruit to stave off burnout?
Well, the first thing I'd say is bookend your days. So you're a busy woman. You do a lot. But what's one thing you could do in the morning for you to remind? It's almost like an honoring of you. So, and so for me, it's, I don't skip my breakfast. It's one of the things, and I give myself coconut milk chia with walnuts, even when I'm on the road. And if I'm going on the road, I make sure I freeze it. And then I just throw it in my suitcase, right? And so by the time I'm wherever I am. So for me, it's that I either go for a walk, I eat, like nourish myself first thing. In the evening, what I do is I usually tune out. My guilty pleasure is like watching shows. And so as I do that, I put my feet in hot water, in a bucket of hot water, with one cup of Epsom salt, one cup of baking soda, and some either eucalyptus oil or lavender oil. And I just soak my feet. And so I start by just making sure I'm bookending my days. Make it simple. Do one thing that really reminds you to tune into you.
I love that.
Something else that I would say is if people don't know how to decipher their own body's unique language, they're going to be picking things up really late. And if you're a high-powered woman, you're, you know, an entrepreneur who's dealing with change quickly, you're leading a family, you're trying to run a company, you picking up clues quickly and being able to pivot is going to save you a lot of grief. So when people say, I don't know what you're talking about, what happens for me is throat constriction and stomach turning is the way my body talks to me when I'm not saying what I should, I'm not speaking up, I'm holding back. Okay, so I've learned that about me. Other people, it might be the base of their tongue, their jaw might be tight, their shoulders, their neck, maybe chest, you know, discomfort, maybe sweating. I don't know what it is for you, heart racing. But your body has a unique way of speaking to you. And what you really want to do is be able to pick it up when it's subtle, early. What happens before that? And what happens before that? And how do, okay. But most people tune out and say, instead, they head to the coffee store and go, make it a double today. I've got a rough day. They don't tune in, they tune out. Mm-hmm. So now you're going to be, you might power through your day, but you're going to be missing things that you're going to have to go back and clean up because your intuition spoke to you. Your heart started racing a little bit and you're like, yeah, I'd like, give me a chocolate chip cookie. I'm going to, and you keep moving. So when people say, I don't know how to do that, what I have them do is hold their AirPod case during their meetings or a stone, something smooth and comfortable. And when something changes in the room, something emotional happens, something intense happens, for them to say, like, I can feel this AirPod case in my hand. Because after you do that for a few meetings, oh yes, after you do that,
I like it.
Pretty soon you'll say, oh my God, my right shoulder is tight. Oh my God, my lower back is kind of uncomfortable. We don't realize the value of tuning into our physiology early because it gives us the signals really early. We pick it up late. You know, when you say things to yourself like, I knew I shouldn't have hired that person. Oh, I knew it, but I kept going because I didn't have time. Right. So it's about, so I'd say bookend your days, right? And if you're somebody who does that, you start off with something amazing. You do your meditation, you have, 5 minutes of quiet time breathing. You've got that, and you do something for yourself at night to ground yourself. What I'd say is start tuning into your body during the day. It's not going to slow you down, but you have to slow down for a little bit in order to speed up, because when you start gathering internal data, your intuition is going to kick in much earlier.
And there's a part in your book where you actually talk about anger, which tends to be the emotion that kind of surfaces more obviously, right? And I think you're talking about, like, there's wisdom in that, just as an example of like a trigger that might not just be physical, but that you can identify. We know when we feel anger. And so
Well,
I,
for some people, they get flushed and they turn red. For other people, they start sweating. Some people feel an adrenaline surge of energy through their body. Some people feel muscles tightening. A lot of times, people can say they feel anxious or anger, but they don't know how to decipher what the signals of their body so they can pick it up early. So once you break it down, you will start picking it up early, and then you can pause, you can redirect, you can pivot. You're going to have so much more power in your life when you don't feel like the emotions are happening to you.
Yes, and that's an interesting one too when we consider anger, because it's that when we're feeling burned out, and we talked about this, there's this feeling like I can do a lot when I have these tools that are in the book, right? But then there's like that feeling that a boundary's been crossed, that there's something wrong with the system, that so how can we turn the anger that comes with burnout, if we have that energy to get beyond the exhaustion, right? How can we turn that into wisdom, and what can we do with that? How can we work with it constructively?
Well, the first thing you want to do is you want to notice the circumstances that are happening in that moment. Oftentimes, so first of all, let's back up. Anger. Anger is not anger. It's a secondary emotion. Anger is rooted in either fear or hurt. So there's something that you're afraid of or something that has been painful to you. And so your anger is a way of letting yourself know that a boundary has been crossed, sometimes that you didn't even articulate or didn't even know was there. So it's protecting you. Okay. And sometimes in our ancestor, our ancestors would get angry if they thought the tribe was going to get eaten, or and that would give them the adrenaline to fight. A lot of times, anger is about our values, and it's about seeing other people being treated a certain way or us being treated a certain way. And so the first thing you want to do is understand, first of all, what are the physical signals that tell you you're angry? Secondly, when that happens, how do you respond? Are you able to notice what's happening and pause, or do you launch into whatever is happening next? Now, you were talking to me about what do we do if a boundary's been crossed, or there's a systems issue, right, that we need to address. People get angry, and how do you know? You know because their tone changes. It's like, what's your middle name?
Sophie.
It's Chantel Sophie Perriott. Is that my, am I?
Pierrot. Yep,
Yeah.
Pierrot.
Get down here right now. People use like the entire formal name, right? They swear. You start hearing doors slamming, people thumping, closets. So, first of all, pay attention to how anger shows up. When you become aware of it, you start to now be able to manage your own breath. When someone's angry, they have like forced, short breath. What do you mean? What do you know? Get over here. It start their tone changes, all of these things. The first thing you need to understand about anger is, what does anger do to you? Does it shut you down where you're not speaking? Does it have you blow up? Or are you somebody who, in the face of anger, can calm yourself down through breathing, regulate your own physiology, And are you someone who's comfortable navigating anger in yourself or in others?
That's a really good point.
Because if you're not,
yeah, right,
you're not doing anything in the middle of it because you aren't even managing yourself.
Yeah.
So you cannot be in control of a room, a conversation, a situation, if you're not in control of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is people understanding, listen, what am I afraid of? What am I hurt by? What do I am afraid might happen? What is painful for me? What's being violated? All of that. So you want to understand that. Then you want to understand how you are aware that anger happens. You want to know how you show up in it.
Mm-hmm.
Also want to, for many years, I had the bullying when I was young from my sister. My dad had a temper. And I remember I was like 7 years old. And this is in the first book. It's in TalkRx. And I remember my parents fighting about something, maybe money or something. And my dad getting so mad, he took an empty plate in front of him, picked it up and smashed it on the table. And I was like 7 years old. And I remember standing in the corner of the room, not consciously. My mother said, Neha, go upstairs to your bedroom, please. And like, I could hear her trying to like calm me, right? And I remember thinking, this time it was the plate, but don't make dad mad because next time it'll be you.
Wow.
And as I moved forward in my life, anytime somebody got angry in front of me, I became smaller and it wasn't going to be me that was in the line of fire like that plate. And it wasn't until 30 years later that I was getting bullied at work in my hospital setting that I faced that I became that seven-year-old girl in the face of my own work environment. And that until you understand your relationship to anger, you will not be effective at healing it outside of you.
God, so, that is so helpful.
Well, it's MeWe World again. MeWe World. The reason I did Powered by Me is not for anyone to take blame. It's because I'm going to help you find your agency, heal
yes.
yourself, because yes. then you will be like this amazing force of healing in the world.
Yes. 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 I love that so much. Thank you. And just, you know, I don't mean to, there's so many things in here that you've got practices for self-forgiveness. You've got this spiritual energy assessment, which there are so many assessments in here with each, like there's the body intake assessment. There's, you know, the mental realm. There's so much here that's very practical.
Yeah.
So for anybody, this is, it's almost like a workbook. It's way more than a workbook because with your medical background, you're really giving a lot of perspective, for burnout. And I appreciate that with a foreword by Mark Hyman, by the way, one of my faves. But in addition to that, there's stuff that we can do. And this anger piece has been up. It's been coming up a lot with burnout, like,
yep.
people need change. And
yep.
I love that you're offering a way to work with it, not just for yourself to be free of it, but
yep.
also to, like, you know, really change the system. And
so why don't we do this? I think this would be helpful.
Yeah.
I have live client videos that I talk about how do we manage anger and in ourselves and with others. I have handouts that I can give you on how do you actually formulate communicating when you're feeling angry or when you're in the face of somebody else feeling angry. I also have an overall burnout assessment that somebody can do all in one place that I have online. Why don't we give the links?
Yes,
to
yes, yes.
The overall burnout assessment. If somebody's like, all right, listen, I just want to do it all right now. I don't want to go through her whole book. I want to see comprehensively physical, mental, emotional, social, spiritual. I just want to sit down and see where I'm having a net drain of energy.
Yes.
I'll give you that link. So that'll be the last part of it. It'll be
burnout-rx. Yeah.
And then an anger video where I help somebody kind of walk through anger themselves and they can see me live coaching so that they can take the tools that we're using and make them real and make them practical. And I'll give you the, how do you speak when you're angry and how do you, what do you say in the face of somebody else being angry?
Yeah, let's do it. And in fact, there's so much overlap with your Talk RX book too.
You bet. You bet.
So that's a gem in and of itself. And I'm so grateful to have had this time with you. And good luck with your book. And for those of you who are watching, it's absolutely beautiful. And yes, grab it. It's got so much in there and more in the show notes. And Neha, if you could stay on for just one more minute while we say goodbye to these emerging women.
Yes.
More to come.
Yeah, more to come. I'm so glad we're reconnected, Chantal. I think there's a lot more we can do together.
Totally.